Okay, our next case is Wells v. Herbie. Before we get underway, I know we have two appellees, so have you discussed the division of time?
We have 5 minutes and 5 minutes.
Okay, very good. So, appellate ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
So noted.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Will Gilner, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Michael Wells in this matter. My client has appealed the decision of the district court granting summary judgment in favor of the defendants, Jeffrey Harvey, and his employer Spence Counseling, based upon the statute of limitations for professional negligence. We are here today to ask this court respectfully to reverse the entry of summary judgment in favor of the defendants and remand this matter for further proceedings. This case arises out of an underlying professional negligence case based on marital counseling.
So what was the negligent act and when did it occur?
There were multiple negligent acts that occurred during the counseling, including things that were done and things that were not done. It's true that the counseling ended in 2011. Under the discovery rule, the plaintiff has 1 year from the date of discovery of the cause of action to initiate his suit. And we believe that there's a genuine issue of material fact as to when he discovered his cause of action.
Well, what was the negligent act that occurred during the counseling?
Things that were said and things that were not offered to the parties. When you go to marital counseling, you don't expect your wife to be manipulated, groomed, and eventually dated and married.
Was it the testimony that there was no romantic relationship going on during the time of the counseling?
That's correct.
What is the negligent act? What is the professional negligence here?
The negligence was the things that he said and encouraged during the counseling and the services that he did not provide to the parties that were seeking counseling.
And so the last counseling session occurred in August of 2011.
That's correct.
And he did not find... When was it that he first decided or first learned that there had been alleged professional negligence?
In January of 2016, and he filed his case in December of 2016, within 1 year of discovery of the cause of action.
How is it that he didn't determine something in 2014, December of 2014?
He was aware of some of the facts at that time, that's correct, but he was not aware of a cause of action at that time. He did not know that. He has no training in the legal profession or the psychology profession or the counseling or therapy services.
Was it August of 2014 when he first learned that there was a romantic relationship going on?
Correct.
So he knew something was afoot then, correct?
Correct, in 2014.
Okay, so then he would have had a year after that to do something.
Well, if you look at the affidavits that were presented by the plaintiff, by Mr. Egan, and by Dr. Stein, I believe there is a question of fact as to when he discovered his cause of action. There's a difference, and this is where it gets complicated, between a claim, which is a legal theory, and a cause of action. But
the statute talks about the date of discovery.
Correct.
When the person was put on notice that there may have been something going on.
Other jurisdictions define a cause of action as a right which a party has to institute a judicial proceeding, specifically the states of Florida and Montana. I do not find that language in the basket case law, but I think it's applicable here. If I could make an analogy to a medical malpractice case, I had a client whose daughter fractured her ring finger, and they operated on the middle finger. She wakes up, she still has a fractured finger, that's obvious at that time. But in a medical malpractice case where you leave an instrument or a sponge inside your abdomen after surgery, it happened at that time, but you're not aware of it. And I believe that based on the affidavits submitted to the
August of 2014, he learns of the relationship. He's on notice of something.
Correct.
So is that question as to whether or not that he's on notice as it relates to the statute of limitations, is that a question of fact or is that a question of law?
I believe it's a little of each.
Do you have authority for that?
I do not. With respect to Dr. Stein's affidavit, I believe that that did provide relevant information and evidence of fact that is a consequence of the determination of the action, and it makes that determination, that those facts, more or less probable than it would be without that evidence. The relevancy test for admission of evidence is that it has the tendency to link to the existence of fact that any fact at issue more or less probable. Paragraph 7 of Dr. Stein's affidavit. She states that he did not discover the cause of action and that it could not reasonably have been discovered within 2 years of the plaintiff's treatment from the defendants. As a layperson, he trusts his counsel to provide appropriate counseling as a licensed mental health practitioner. He did what his counselor suggested. He followed his instructions. He believed that his counselor knew what was best. He's not a sophisticated individual in the field of psychology, counseling, law. And I refer back to my analogy. This is not a situation where we operated on the wrong finger. This is a more complicated, detailed, layered.
When he became aware of the relationship in August of 14, he clearly could have sought legal counsel at that point because he knew something was going on.
He could have, yes, but he did not. In fact, he was assaulted by the defendant, physically assaulted by the defendant at that time.
Isn't the discovery rule, isn't it tied to the discovery of facts? We could reasonably put a person on notice.
I think the case law, some of the case law definitely says that, but there is the Barron's case that refers to the discovery of the cause of action, and I think that's where this gets complicated.
Well, I'm looking at the language of the statute. It says it sets forth the 1 year. Then the action may be commenced within 1 year from the date of such discovery or from the date of discovery of facts, which would reasonably lead to such discovery.
Very briefly, the 1 year discovery exception provided for in Section 25222 is a tolling provision that applies when the plaintiff did not discover and could not reasonably have discovered the existence of the cause of action within the 2 year statute of limitations, and that's citing Barron's versus Blank, 284 Nebraska, 454.
When did the statute start to run based upon your theory here?
January of 2016.
That's if the 1 year applies, but right, if we're applying the 2 year statute of limitations, when did
2010
that the last day of the counseling session?
Yes.
And did you plead here that any specific facts as it relates to what was going on in 2011, that is the basis for the claim?
Yes.
And what is that?
The basis for the claim?
Yes.
The things that he said and did to the plaintiff and his wife at the time, and the services that he did not provide them. That is the basis for the
your theory being that at that time, during up to 2001, he was in fact grooming?
Yes.
Did the complaint allege that?
The complaint did not specifically allege that.
It was a pro se complaint filed by him, as
it was, and it had many specific claims, which were, I think, general enough to cover that.
Was it amended?
I'm sorry?
Was it subsequently amended when
it was not?
You want to reserve the rest?
I will.
The bottom? Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Mary Schott, and I represent Jeff Harvey. And I would like to address the statute of limitations issue, and Spencer Johnson's attorney, Lisa Meyer, is going to address the evidence and the affidavit in particular. The facts in this case are basically not disputed. We know the dates where the treatment occurred, when various things were discovered. What we're left with is a question of law when the facts are not in dispute, and the court decided as a matter of law that there had been discovery. The things that have been cited in support of the tolling or the lack of discovery are legal conclusions made by the various people submitting affidavits. So, what my impression is from all the briefing that's been done is that Mr. Wallace has never really responded to our argument. The defendants have pointed out that there was discovery, and in response, he's been saying, well, we didn't discover it until 2016, and that's just clearly an error. So, treatment ended on August 31st of 2011, and 2 years after that, in 2013, the statute would have run if the discovery rule didn't apply. So what we have after that is in the fall, sometime, well, actually, in October of 2013, Mr. Wallace and his wife Allison split. They were divorced in March of 2014, and in the fall of 2014, Mr. Wallace learned from his children that Mr. Harvey and Allison were dating. So I believe that should be enough to put him on notice that something was going on when his wife ends up dating the former marriage counselor. But there's more. There was a recording made on December 11th of 2014, where Mr. Wallace was talking to Mr. Harvey, and he made it clear that he knew there was a problem, and he had actually investigated it. And two telling remarks were, divorce counselors and psychologists said you were out of line, and something was going on in that counseling room. And those things right there make it clear that he had noticed, and he had actually investigated it. He had talked to potential experts about it. And the court stopped there and found that there was definitely notice by December 11th. But a few days later, Mr. Wallace met with Charles Spence from Spence Counseling, and Mr. Spence said that Mr. Harvey's actions in becoming romantically involved were inappropriate, not acceptable, and not condoned.
And that was still in December of 14th?
It was, Your Honor. It was sometime before December 18th of 2014. So any of those things would have constituted discovery, and then there would have been a year after that to file suit.
I get his argument. His argument is, there were some facts here, I understood something was wrong, but I didn't understand I had a cause of action. Can you address that?
Sure, Your Honor. I think the case law is just abundantly clear. It's that knowing you have a right to sue is not what constitutes discovery. So in January of 2016, Mr. Wallace talked to a former attorney who said, hey, you can sue, but it just simply is not discovery. It's knowing the facts that constitute the cause of action, not knowing that you actually can sue.
It's putting someone on notice that something may have occurred that would require further investigation.
It is something that would put a person of reasonable intelligence on notice, that further investigation would have led to discovery of the cause of action. And I think it goes farther than that. It's not even, he did the further investigation and actually did discover his cause of action. The other thing he cites in 2016 is he began to have problems, interpersonal problems with his son and his wife, and that constitutes additional damages. And discovering additional damages is also not discovery of the cause of action. It doesn't restart the statute once you have notice. It didn't restart it in 2016 in January and make filing in December appropriate.
And when you said his son and his wife, you mean his former wife, correct?
Correct, John.
argument, if you will.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. As Ms. Schott said, we've split the issues here on our time, but if there's any questions on the statute of limitations, certainly I can, if anything comes up during this, I'm going to address some of the affidavit issues that are in the appeal. Specifically, the trial court was correct in sustaining the defendant's objections to the affidavit paragraphs in Ellen Stein's affidavit, specifically paragraphs 6, 7, 9, 10, and 11. Nebraska statutes address affidavits, and the summary judgment statutes specifically address them. 25-1334 addresses affidavits offered in support of and in opposition of motions for summary judgment, and that statute says that such affidavits shall be made on personal knowledge. They shall be set forth facts that are admissible in evidence, and they shall set forth how that witness is competent to testify to the matters set forth therein. So that statute is applicable, and what's key in that is two things: facts. The affidavits in support of and opposition of motions for summary judgment need to be facts, and also they need to be facts that are admissible and not conclusions of law. Case law is clear, and this court has held that statements and affidavits as to opinions, beliefs, or conclusions of law are of no effect in summary judgment motions. And if you look at Dr. Stein's affidavit, that is the majority of those paragraphs, that is what it is. Except for paragraph six, we objected mostly to hearsay to that paragraph, and in that she says the plaintiff reported to her that he did not discover his injuries until he spoke with his ex-attorney friend. That's clearly hearsay. That's not her personal knowledge, and it's not a fact. The rest of the paragraph specifically talk about in paragraph 10, she says the plaintiff did not have the knowledge or training to know what would have been appropriate or inappropriate in his counseling sessions, and he did not have that knowledge at the time that it amounted to professional negligence. That's not a fact. We're in summary judgment, we're talking about facts.
Is that paragraph that you were talking about?
That's paragraph 10.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is that
an opinion?
I believe that's an opinion.
Is she an expert?
She's an expert.
She did not get expert opinions.
But in summary judgment, that's not what this summary judgment is about. The summary judgment is about the statute of limitations, and for that purpose, it should be a fact is what's in these affidavits. I'm not talking about the standard of care or those types of professional. Yes, this is a professional negligence case, but that's not what's at issue in the motion for summary judgment.
So it's your position that it's an opinion, but it's really an opinion of law.
Correct.
Okay.
Opinion of law that she can't make, doesn't have personal knowledge to make, and is not qualified to make. She's a forensic and clinical psychologist. And also, that paragraph she says in there, he didn't have the knowledge to know that it was inappropriate at the time the counseling sessions were taking place. That's not relevant. What was happening prior to 2011, she's talking about what was happening prior to 2011. She's not talking about what happened in 2014, 2015, 2016. So that's not relevant what he knew or did not know in 2011, because we're not talking about the regular statute of limitations in this case. We're talking about the
discovery. But don't you have to take care of the original statute of limitations in order to get to the discovery? I mean, don't you have to prove that you didn't know during those 2 years and couldn't know during those 2 years in order to get to the discovery?
Correct. But you really never addressed that. We kind of assumed that we were talking about a discovery rule here because the statute was so blown when we were.
And also having testified that he did not believe there was anything improper going on during the time of the counsel.
Correct. He did. Yes. And so that objection to that was proper, the ruling on that was proper. And then in paragraph 11, Dr. Stein says the plaintiff did not realize his injuries and damages at the time he was receiving professional services from the defendant. Again, not a fact. That and a conclusion, and actually a legal conclusion that she's certainly not competent to make. And again, she's talking about what he knew at the time he was getting the counseling sessions. I believe what's relevant is when did he discover the facts that should have led him to the cause of action. And so she's talking about what he knew back in the counseling sessions. I don't really care about what he knew in counseling sessions because we're talking about a discovery statute of limitations. And so it's not only is it an opinion, it's not relevant. And so the trial court was correct in keeping those out. And if you find that the trial court wasn't correct, it's not prejudicial.
Okay, thank you. How much did take her over?
34 seconds.
Okay, add that to the appellants, please. So how much time does he have now?
51.
51 seconds, okay. There you go.
I'll be shorter than that, thank you.
Sure.
When viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the appellants and giving them the benefit of all reasonable inference deducible from that evidence, it is our position, it's our contention that genuine issues of material fact exist as when he discovered his cause of action. He was aware of some facts, but I think Dr. Stein's affidavit addresses what he knew during the counseling, and this is not your straightforward case. It's not the case of operating on the wrong finger like my client. This is a more detailed, complicated situation. He didn't have the training, and he didn't discover his cause of action, it's our position, until he spoke to Mr. Egan in January 2016. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. The case is submitted, and we have it under advisement. Thank you.